Mirandola?
Yes, and come on, yeah.
Okay. Do we need to call him?
Well, you can. It's already
9 minutes after.
It's 9 minutes after.
Okay, I'll give him a call.
Okay. Good evening.
Are you on?
I'm on. Do you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yes, we hear you.
I apologize.
That's okay.
I was focused on something and I apologize.
Okay.
With the new time, it just didn't seem like it seems like it's midnight instead of 9 o'clock. I'm going to go ahead and mute.
Okay.
Me too.
We have a lot to read, and because I'm late, and I know who's on, I'm going to say the Anabakoa quickly. And not go through a lot of what we normally do. I hope you'll appreciate that and understand that. Please join me in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa, Gedula Chumin Ha Tati Alephet Gimel Yud Tav Sadi. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Tacharenu Nora Pifreshayim Sintet Nun. Na Gibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kevavat Shamwen Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kashin. Barchen Tacharen Rachame Sikata Tamid Gamle Betet Reish Saritat Gimel. Hasim Kadosh Bero Tuha Nael Adatah Petuf Tet Munayan. Yahid Gea Lamcha Pene Zohre Kidushata Yud Gimelamed Pezayim Tu. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziakatenu Yodea Talumo Shimkufal Sadiyutta. And the eighth verse of the Anabakoa, we say in a whisper. The Tzaddikim who left this day I believe it's the fourth day. Waiting for the link to open up. It's the fifth day of Kislev. Rabbi Chaim Yosef David, the son of Rabbi Avraham Azulai. Both are very important Kabbalists who were very prevalent in their writings, very important writings. Rabbi Yaakov Yehuda Tannenbaum, Rabbi Shmuel Eliezer Halevi Edels, Rabbi David Luria, known as the Radal, Rabbi Asher Anshe Jungris, Rabbi Baruch Bar Leibowitz, Rabbi Mordechai Reimer, say the Shema Yisrael, in case any of us have not said it tonight, the two lines. Please cover your eyes and lean slightly to the left. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Tonight's class is the writings of the Ari. You can find the handout on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix in row 14, the second column from the left. When that landing page opens up, scroll down to Parasha Vayetze. And there are two links under that. And depending on the time, the first link we're going to read is the second link under the Parsha Vayetze. It's titled The Mystery of the Matron's Question. And we'll see when we finish reading this what time it is. Hopefully we can also read the other one. It's very short. I shouldn't say read. I should say study, because that's what we do with the Ari's writings. We truly study them, many of which we have to contemplate. We'll start with the L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud kud shabari hu ishkinte bit hiluur himud hilud hiluur himu. Le'akta l'shem yudhe bavadhe, v'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael, limud Torah mitzvah, la'asok Torah mitzvah, v'yihi no'am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'asei yadenu kunene aleinu ma'asei yadenu kunenehu. Kabbalah describes the details of marital harmony and reincarnation. Parashat Vayetze describes the way Jacob married Leah and Rachel. In this context, the Arizal discusses the issue of divine providence in arranging matches. In the Midrash on this parasha, it is written that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shimon opened his discourse by explaining the following verse. God makes individuals dwell in a house. He brings out the captives in proper ways. He continued, a certain non-Jewish matron once asked Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta, in how many days did the Holy One, blessed be He, create His world? The Holy One, blessed be He, sits and makes matches. It's kind of like a paragraph heading. The Midrash continues, in answer to the matron's question, in 6 days, he answered, and what has he been doing since then? The Holy One, blessed be He, sits and makes matches. He answered, assigning the daughter of this man to that man, the wife of this man to that man, the possessions of this man to that man. If that is difficult, she scoffed, I too can do the same. I have so many manservants and maidservants. In no time I can match them up, said he to her. If it is as easy in your eyes, it is as difficult before the Holy One, blessed be He, as the dividing of the Red Sea. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta cautioned. Now, I am adding, please note the concept of matches is much broader than normally thought by men and women. It includes the concept of divorce and widowhood, as well as property. When people think about the stock market going up and down, people might allow that the Creator determines the market value at each moment. Yet based on the above, we learn that the Creator is determining which market participator will transfer his or her stock to which other participant, and also at what price. It's an awe-inspiring consciousness to think about that. She went and took 1,000 manservants and 1,000 maidservants and lined them up opposite each other. She then said, this one will marry that one, and this one will marry that one, and married them all that night. The next day, those who were thus united came to her. This one's head was injured. That one's eyes were out of its socket. Another one's leg was broken. She asked them, what's the matter? This woman said, I do not want this man. While this man protested, I do not want that woman. Straight away, she summoned Rabbi Yossi Bar Halafta and admitted to him, there is no God like your God. It is true. Your Torah is indeed beautiful and praiseworthy, and you spoke the truth. Said he to her, did I not say to you, if it is easy in your eyes, it is as difficult before the Holy One, blessed be he, as the dividing of the Red Sea. The Holy One, blessed be he, matches them up against their will and to their detriment. What is the proof? God makes individuals dwell in a house. He brings out the prisoners in proper ways. The Hebrew word is bakosharot. What does bakosharot mean? Weeping. In Hebrew, bakhi and song, shirot. He who desires his companion utters song, and he who does not weeps. This is the midrash that the Ari is going to explain. It is proper to understand the following questions. First, what in this verse so troubled Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shimon that it forced him to interpret it as referring to making matches? The simple meaning of the text is that it refers to Egypt. The Israelites came to Egypt few in number, 70 souls, and God made them into the house of Israel. He increased their number as it is written, and the Israelites were fruitful and swarmed. The verse thus means God made out of the few a multitude and a great house. The verse then describes what happened afterwards, that he brought them out in proper ways, in a time fit for leaving, neither in the hot summer nor the cold winter, but in the spring season, the month of Nisan. This is the meaning of the word in proper ways. Secondly, why did the matron, in phrasing her questions, say, in how many days with a lamed, meaning literally for how many days, rather than the bet, which would mean in how many days? True, we could say that this is a printing error, for in some of the other sources in which the same story is told, the word is printed with a bet. But it is better to understand it the way it is written here, especially since in yet other sources it is written the way it is written here. Another question, why did Rabbi Yossi Bar Halafta bring proof that God made the world in 6 days from the verse, for in 6 days God made, which is from Parashat Yitro? In Parashat Bereshit, the entire account of creation is told in detail. This happened on the first day. That happened on the second day. And so on. And God finished on the seventh day. It would have been better to bring proof from there than from a verse in Exodus. Since God created the world, he has been making and fixing delicacies and worlds to bestow upon the righteous in the world that is coming. Furthermore, the matron really intended only to ask the second question. From then until now, what has he been doing? The answer to the first question is obvious to everyone, that God created the world in 6 days. So why did she have to preface there her real question with the first one? Elsewhere, it is implied that everyone admits that the world was created in 6 days. So what she really wanted to ask could not have been this question, but only the second question. So again, why did she preface it with the first question? Furthermore, what kind of question is the second question she asked? What has God been doing since then? Who doesn't know that God oversees all the details of life and sustains and provides for everything, from the horns of the Re'im to the eggs of the lice? That he causes the rain to fall, makes the dew blossom, makes the wind blow, provides for the needs of every living thing, and so on ad infinitum. The Re'im is a large bison-like animal. The image is that God provides for all creatures, from the greatest to the least. Besides which, our sages state, in reference to the verse, mention not the sins of my youth, that since God created the world, he has been making and fixing delicacies and worlds to bestow upon the righteous in the world that is coming. They offered a parable to illustrate this, of a king who prepared a great feast and invited the notables of his capital to it. But they were too few to eat the whole meal, so he invited the middle class of people. But they were still too few. So in the end, he invited the whole city, great and small, so as not to waste the feast he had prepared. Thus King David said, "Mention not the sins of my youth and my transgressions for the sake of your goodness, Hashem, so that there be enough people to benefit from it." Even if we assume that this matron, being a non-Jew, did not know this, and Rabbi Yossi did not wish to tell her this as an answer, I'm sorry, it jumped, so let me get back to where we were. Rabbi Yossi did not wish to tell her this as an answer, because she might not have believed in the world that is coming. There are numerous examples of things Hashem is doing in this world, as we have said. This being the case, what was her question? And why didn't Rabbi Yossi want to answer her thus, but said instead that God is making matches, to which she could reply, "I can also do this." If we would have answered her by saying what we said, that he is sustaining and providing for everyone from the horns of the Re'im, etc., she would not have been able to reply, "I can also do this." Furthermore, our sages have said that all souls, from the time they are formed out of their supernal source, out of the place from where they were hewn, emerge as male and female together. Afterwards, each half goes its own way. the male to one body and the female to another. And they eventually join in this world, so-and-so with so-and-so. We may assume that such a match does not have to be forced against their will. Why then does the Midrash state that God matches them up against their will and to their detriment? The most joyous occasion in a person's life is the day of his wedding and the day of his heart's joy. Another question. We have never seen anyone get married against his will or to his detriment. And the most joyous occasion in a person's life is the day of his wedding and the day of his heart's joy. At least when people get married, they do so feeling that this is for the good and that they will be happy. Furthermore, if it is indeed true that God makes matches against our will, there should be no reward or punishment for fulfilling or avoiding the mitzvah to procreate. For if a person is married to his wife perforce, why should he earn reward by marrying? And why should he incur punishment for not marrying? He could reply to the heavenly court, why wasn't I forced by heaven to marry like you force others? We must also understand why in the matron's question, since then, what has he been doing? Why did she articulate the pronoun he explicitly? In Hebrew, the subject pronoun can be understood from the verb, and there is no necessity to articulate it explicitly. Furthermore, Rabbi Yossi also chose to phrase his answer explicitly, saying the Holy One, blessed be he, sits and makes matches. He could have simply responded, he makes matches. Why did he mention the Holy One, blessed be he, explicitly? And also, why did he say sits? The answer to all this is as follows. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shimon assumed that if the verse God causes individuals to dwell as a house refers to the Exodus from Egypt, it should have read, he makes the few into many. Why does it use the idiom individuals? And why does it use the idiom as a house to mean into many? Furthermore, the verb he causes to dwell, if it means increasing the Jewish people, does not fit well with the name Elohim, which used for God in this verse, which indicates strict judgment. What God did for the Jewish people in taking them out of Egypt was pure mercy. So it would have been more appropriate to use in this verse the name of mercy, saying Hashem causes the individuals, etc. Why instead is the name Elohim used? He therefore says that through understanding the argument between Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalafta and the matron, we will be able to understand this verse properly, why the name Elohim is used. And for this reason, he says that it is proper to use the name Elohim in reference to making matches, for God forces matches to take place, as we will explain further on. Please, Hashem. As for the matron, even though her main question and intention was about her second question, since then, what has he been doing? She wisely prefaced this with her first question, in how many days? This is because she saw that she could be answered in the way we have described, namely that God oversees all the details of life and nourishes and sustains from the horns of the Re'im, etc. She therefore prefaced this question, Within how many days did the Holy One, blessed be He, create His world? She meant, we cannot say that someone who did such a great act in only 6 days has since then been occupied solely with such minuscule details. For since He is so powerful, this cannot take Him so much time, and He must still have much time left. Rabbi Yossi ben Chalakta therefore had to answer her that He is busy making batches, meaning that besides all that she knew God does every day, He does this too, and it is a difficult task that requires a lot of time. For God has to orchestrate many complicated webs of coincidences and fortuitous circumstances to arrange that people meet and marry their proper matches. This explanation accords with the textual reading in which the matron's question begins with the letter bet, meaning in how many days. In these texts, Rabbi Yossi also answered her beginning with the letter bet, meaning in 6 days. She really meant to ask for how many millennia would the world endure. But according to the textual reading in which she asked for how many days would a lamed, and Rabbi Yossi also responded to her for 6 days would a lamed. Her intention was to ask, for how many days was it God's intention that the world last? Since she was asking about God and in His eyes, 1,000 years are as a day that passes. And it is known that the world will exist for 6,000 years, and 1,000 years after it will be desolate. It follows that she really meant to ask for how many millennia will the world endure. For each millennium is like a day in Hashem's eyes. Continuing with the matron's logic in this version of the question, since He foresees all that will be and his original intent was that the world exists for a fixed time, He probably endowed each creature with, when first He created the world, with all the power it requires to exist for the duration of the world. If so, what has He been doing since then? We cannot say that He has been overseeing His creatures and that He has to provide for everything from the horns of the Ra'im and so forth. For all the energy they require and all their sustenance has already been prepared, readied, and endowed for them from the moment of creation. This idea can be better understood by understanding the question raised in the Zohar regarding the verse quoted here. For in 6 days God created the heavens and the earth. The verse literally reads, for 6 days. Why is the world in left out and only implied? The answer given is that God made the world in general, heaven and earth, as 6 days, the six extremities, which are the six supernal days, the six sephirot. These are the six sephirot from Chesed to Yesod. There are six facets to human emotion and character. So therefore, God took 6 days to express these in creation. This is because it is known that the days are not just arbitrary units of time, but are rather bona fide creations of real substance, similar to angels but more sublime and inclusive. As it is written, days will be formed, and the days of Israel drew near, and the days of David drew near. The six supernal days conduct the affairs of this world. each one on its temporal day of the week, giving all who ask for their needs whatever they require. For Hashem, the Creator, already endowed them with all the energy they require, each one for its time when He created them. The six sefirot are the channels through which divine beneficence flows into the world. And I am adding, the word day is a code word. What do you think the code word means? Now, the angel Memtet, which is called the minister of the world, is composed of six letters. These are the six extremities, as they are projected within him, which are the six powers, manifest as the six supernal days we have mentioned. The affairs of the world overall are conducted by him, for he is the minister of the world, even though the aforementioned supernal days are superior to him. This is because God, acting as the creator, is his presence in Ima. This being the reason why the name Elohim is used in the account of the creation of the world. As we know, stern judgment originates in Ima. The name Elohim is associated with Ima, the mother of the world, of the six sephirot of emotion that govern the world. Bina is the power to differentiate between details and implications of concepts in order to accept or reject them as truth. The world is governed by these strict laws of nature, and therefore the name Elohim is used exclusively in the primary account of creation. In contrast, the six extremities of Zerampin are the ones who conduct the affairs of the world. Thus, the Sephirot of Memtet, who personifies Zerampin, are of a lower order than the source of the emotions within Bina. This is why the matron asked, "What does he do?" Meaning, I already know there is much to occupy him, such as feeding the world from the horns of the Ra'im, etc. But all this is taken care of by the supernal days, the original creation, as we mentioned. Whereas he himself, the creator, the supernal partsuf of Ima, what does he do? Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta therefore brought her proof from the verse, "In 6 days," for she did not ask him about the creation week, in which case it would have been appropriate for him to answer her by quoting verses from the account of creation. Rather, she questioned him about the whole world. For how many days, how many millennia will the supernal days conduct its affairs? For it will exist only for that many days. For that many millennia. He replied, "For 6 days," meaning in order for the world to endure for 6 days. She asked, "What is the duration of creation?" And he answered, 6 millennia. This is also why he told her that the Holy One, blessed be He, sits. He did not mean to imply that God literally sits. God forbid, for God is not physical, and the concepts of standing and sitting do not apply to him. Rather, the intention was to answer her statement that God sits, meaning is idle, being free from running all the details of life, these being handled by Memtet, as we said. This is the meaning of his statement, "The Holy One, blessed be He," meaning he himself sits, occupies himself solely with making matches. So whereas the day-to-day running of the world is handled by God's underling, Memtet, who serves as an organizing principle to funnel divine beneficence downward, the task of orchestrating the events of life with divine providence in order to match up couples is handled by Ima. When the embryo is formed, the soul issues from its source, splits into male and female. The reason he has to do this is because matches are arranged in accordance with divine justice, in accordance with the party's merits, as we will explain. This being the case, no one can do this without him, but him, since he alone is the one judge, and alone can assure that they will be accomplished fairly relative to the conditions of the hour. True, when the embryo is formed, the soul issues from its source, splits into male and female, and therefore the match is intrinsic, and no further evaluation of who suits whom should be necessary. But this applies only to a person's first marriage. Certainly for such matches, no divine effort need be expended. And such matches are not made against the party's wishes, but rather with their full goodwill. But here, in the case the matron was asking about, we are talking about second marriages, where a person is given a spouse commensurate with what he has earned by his deeds. Thus, since a person has free choice to sin against his God, God has to scheme all kinds of schemes so that no one pushed away remains pushed away forever. Thus, the verse under discussion describes second marriages, and more remarkably, God, Ima, occupies himself since creation with arranging second marriages. But the definition of a second marriage is broader than simply the second marriage in this lifetime, as we will now see. Such people become reincarnated, but they do not reincarnate as a couple. For sometimes he is reincarnated in one generation and she in another, such that the reincarnated man needs to be matched up with a different reincarnated woman, who also lacks her original mate in this incarnation. That is similar to him in merits. Matching up such a couple is indeed a very difficult thing, inasmuch as they are different in nature, not having originated from the same soul root. It is therefore difficult to get them together. These reincarnates are called individuals, literally singles, because each one is by itself separated from its real soulmate. Such marriages are referred to as being done against the party's wills. This does not apply to the wedding, for then everyone is happy. On the day of their wedding and on the day of their heart's rejoicing, the difficulty lies only in sustaining the marriage. As to the matches the matron made between the manservants and the maidservants, we may assume they first said something positive, but afterwards they fell into arguments, and she could not keep these marriages going. Therefore, the verses we have quoted refers to God as Elohim, for he judges these reincarnates according to his attributes of strict justice, in accordance with their deeds, and thereby makes these marriages endure. This is why the verse uses the idiom of making them sit. For sitting implies remaining, as in the verse, and you dwelt literally sat in Kadesh. which means they stayed there, for God makes these people, who, as we said, are individuals, stay in one house, even against their natures. For their innate nature is to bond with their original soulmates. This explains why there can be reward and punishment for fulfilling or neglecting the mitzvah to marry and procreate. For in a second marriage, the person first couples with his spouse of his own goodwill and volition, and he thereby acquires merit for fulfilling the mitzvah. And if he does not want to marry, he incurs punishment. It is only after the marriage that God forces the couple to remain together in one house. This is the meaning of the verse. He causes individuals to dwell in the house, as we have said. This is the end of our first essay. Does anyone have any questions? We still have a few minutes, and I think we will have enough time to read the second reading, second essay, called Spiritual Wages. God also rewards his employees from the week through Shabbat. Rabbi Chaim Vital gives us an anecdotal illustration of the lengths the Arizal went to in order to deal with his employees properly. My teacher, the Arizal, was extremely careful regarding the mitzvah of paying a worker on time. He sometimes put off praying mincha until he had paid the workers. This sometimes meant waiting to pray until sunset if he did not have the cash to pay the wages and had to send people all over to ask others for money until he had enough to pay the wages. Only then would he pray mincha, saying, "How can I pray to God when such a great mitzvah comes my way? Can I put it off and still face God in prayer?" The wages of a hired worker shall not abide with you through the night until morning. In another verse that details this mitzvah, it is written, "On the day he earns them, you shall give him his wages." The full verse is, "Do not withhold the wages due to your poor or destitute hired hand, whether he is one of your brethren or a proselyte living in a settlement in your land. You must give him his wage on the day it is due, and not let the sun set with him waiting for it, since he is a poor man, and to you he lifts his soul. Do not let him call out to God, causing you to have a sin." Jewish law clarifies, what is on time? If the workman had finished the work during the day, he should be paid before the end of the day. If he finishes his work in the evening, he should be paid during the night. Whenever a person performs any mitzvot, he accrues an additional level of Shabbat holiness, even on the weekday. So also is the case with the workman hired by the week, or month, or year. If he has finished his work during the day, he should be paid during the day. If he has finished his work during the night, he should be paid during the night, but not later. I am adding, it is important to note the statement that when one performs a mitzvah, he accrues additional Shabbat holiness. And as the workman doing the mitzvah, he expects his payment during the next Shabbat. Unfortunately, this is not how many non-Orthodox people perceive this teaching of the Torah. it is important to relate that with respect to consciousness, what is not known does not happen. If one does not expect payment on the next Shabbat, one will not receive it. The employer does not transgress the law unless the workman demands his wages, and he, the employer, has the money to pay. If the workman failed to demand his wages, or the employer lacks the money to pay the workman, then there is no violation of the law. Nevertheless, a scrupulous employer should, if necessary, borrow the money to pay the wages at the proper time, for the workman is poor and sets his heart upon his pay. I am adding, in my opinion, this halakha shows how Judaism has been influenced by the secular society. Is it the responsibility of the workman to make sure the employer has the funds to pay him? Of course, this is not the workman's responsibility. Thus, if the employer does not have the funds when it is due, is the responsibility of the employer. The initials of these words in the above verse, Biyomo Tetein Secharo, spell Shabbat. This is because whenever a person performs any mitzvah or learns a lot of Torah on a weekday, he accrues an additional level of Shabbat holiness, even on the weekday. This applies to the full extent of individuals are capable of accruing additional measures of Shabbat holiness. Learning Torah and performing mitzvot increases the individual's divine consciousness. Since Shabbat is the day of higher divine consciousness, we may conceive of the additional measure of divine consciousness attained by learning Torah and doing mitzvot as a piece of Shabbat that is added to the individual. This happens, of course, even in the case of divine service performed on weekdays. This accords with what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai taught, namely that Torah scholars possess on weekdays the level of soul that the unlearned possess on the Shabbat. Thus, the reward that God grants Torah scholars for their studies or to those who observe the mitzvot is likened to that of a worker who expects his wages. For such people earn their spiritual deserts daily. Even on weekdays, when they accrue additional measures of Shabbat holiness. Therefore, the initials of these words hints to the Shabbat. Furthermore, the wages mentioned in this verse can be understood as well to refer to the reward one earns each day for his study and his observance of the Torah. These combine with the other reward, the additional measure of Shabbat, holiness, that comes automatically with the Shabbat, as is known. On Shabbat, every Jew's consciousness ascends a spiritual notch, no matter what. Thus, these two additional measures of divine consciousness are given to the person on Shabbat. In this sense, both types of wages paid to this type of worker are paid on the Shabbat. The Shabbat is therefore alluded to in this verse, and thus is the mystical meaning of he who toils on the days before the Shabbat will eat on the Shabbat. The employer is given an extra level of soul with which to sustain his soul. The physical sense of this statement is simply that if one prepares his meals and other needs before Shabbat, he will be able to enjoy them on Shabbat. But if not, he will have nothing to enjoy, because the preparations he should have done beforehand are forbidden to do on Shabbat. The spiritual sense of the statement is that the extent of one's spiritual experience or level of consciousness on Shabbat is proportional to the amount of spiritual preparation for Shabbat one engages in during the preceding week. In more prosaic terms, one cannot expect to live, to think, to eat like an animal during the week and suddenly turn into an angel on Shabbat. If a person doesn't want to be left out of the action on Shabbat, he'd better put some time into refining himself while he still can during the week. Additionally, this verse implies that specifically someone who fulfills the mitzvah of paying a worker on time acquires the ability to attain an additional level of soul the following Shabbat. This reward is given to him measure for measure. For with regard to paying a worker on time, it is said, "For he lifts up his soul to you." Therefore, in recompense for granting him his soul, so to speak, likewise the employer is given an extra level of soul with which to sustain his weekday. To sustain his weekday soul on the Shabbat. And therefore the Shabbat is alluded to in the initials of this verse. The idiomatic meaning of he lifts up his soul is he looks expectantly, or he directs his desire. That's the end of this section. Does anyone have any questions? Tomorrow we will have two classes. The 4:30 class will be a deeper study of the Lech Lecha from the Zohar. And at 7 o'clock, we will have a Tikkuni Zohar class. Shalom to all. Shalom to all. Did I lose you along the way? Okay. I thought I might have lost you along the way.
No, I took a minute to unmute.
Understand. Shalom gadol to all. Have a beautiful
Shalom.
Evening.
Shalom. You too.
Shalom.